morning's text. Excuse me. I want to go back and review for you the five, and I believe they're excellent reasons, five excellent reasons that Brother Moore gave and gives for the fact that signs, what we were talking about last week, to be wicked, to be evil. And I want to give just a little more detail. First, what he says is, when we were talking about that in the context of the beware of the leaven, the Pharisees and Herod, and in that context, Brother Moore says, signs, one number one, it ignores what Jesus has already done. I give you a little more, just give you a little more detail on that. What that means is, as Brother Moore says, it essentially says, Jesus, we don't believe you. You must prove yourself again and again and again and again. That's why it ignores what Jesus has already done. And that goes to today as well. Number two, the second one is, reason is, it places us as judge over Jesus. Which means, essentially, it means this. Jesus, and this is what I was talking about last week with the MTD, the moral therapeutic deism that so many people have bought into. It places us as judge over Jesus in that it essentially said, Jesus, you perform for me, and I will decide then whether or not you are valid. The third reason is that it places miracles over testimony. What that means is that miracles are used then to attract our attention to valid testimony. And once the testimony has been given, the miracles have served their purpose. But in addition, it does this. It places emotion over reason. In other words, feelings over reason. Instead of thinking through the testimony, we want to feel our way along with souped up experiences. You know, that mountaintop experience. And then the fourth reason he gave is that signs place self over Jesus. And this is different than when it places us as judge over him. In other words, it places self over Jesus. And what he means by that is this, that miracles used for human gratification point in the wrong direction. Instead of pointing to Jesus, where do they point to? They point to self. They become shallow and selfish then. Jesus strove above all to avoid that. That's why he healed in some of the ways that he did when we talked about the deaf and the mute person and the person that we're going to talk about this morning. It's the same reason why he does what he does. And the last reason he gives is that it denigrates true faith. Instead of believing what we can't see based on true testimony, we demand validation at every point. It reminds of what is recorded in John chapter 20, verse 29, when Jesus said to him, "Because you have seen me, have you believed? Blessed are they who did not see and yet believe." So, those are the five reasons, and this is why it's important to pay attention to what is being said today and to what is being taught. That's why it's important you get into the Word yourself. That's why it's important that wherever you hear messages and so forth, that you have the Word with you, that you get into it. That's why it's important that we question. Now our text this morning. Jesus and the 12 have left the area that they were in. They have now come to Bethsaida Julius. Bethsaida Julius, which was on the east bank of the Jordan River. Where it flows into the Sea of Galilee. Brother R.C. Foster brings out that Bethsaida Julius had been built by Philip, Herod Philip. That's Herod Antipas' brother, younger brother, on the edge of his northern province to assist him in collecting taxes from the commerce passing through his way to his brother's domain. It was also named after a daughter of Augustus Caesar. So that's where they're at. That's where they have come to. We find this in Mark chapter 8, verses 22 through 26, which is all I'll deal with this morning. I was going to go further, but I decided just to do with 22 through 26. And they came to Bethsaida, specifically Bethsaida Julius, and they brought a blind man to Jesus and implored him to touch him. Taking the blind man by the hand, he brought him out of the village, and after spitting on his eyes and laying his hands on him, he asked him, "Do you see anything?" And he looked up and said, "I see men, for I see like trees walking around." Then again he laid his hands on his eyes. And he looked intently and was restored. And began to see everything clearly. And he sent him to his home, saying, "Do not even enter the village." In other words, don't go back to Bethsaida Julius. Go home. So let's unpack this in the few minutes we have. Sight is given to a blind man. Now, there's similarities here to the healing of the deaf mute man in Decapolis. Both of these miracles are only recorded by Mark. Luke doesn't record it. John doesn't record it. Matthew doesn't. Only Mark records these two miracles. That's one way in which they're similar. Another way that they're similar is that you notice that these men's friends brought him to Jesus. Friends of the deaf mute man brought him to Jesus. This man's friends bring him, the blind man, to Jesus. So both men are brought by others to Jesus. Notice a third similarity. In the deaf-mute case, Jesus took the man away from those friends, away by himself. Now the 12 may have went with him, probably did, because that's how we can have it recorded. We know that Mark, where he gets his information, is from Peter. The same way with this blind man. We notice the text here. They brought a blind man to Jesus and begged him, implored him, pleaded with him just to touch him, because they believed that he would be healed then if he did so. And what do we notice in verse 23? Jesus takes the blind man by the hand and he takes him away from those friends. And he took them even out of the village. He leaves Bethsaida Julius. To do this healing. A fourth similarity is this. In both cases, the deaf-mute man and this blind man, Jesus uses spittle. Isn't that interesting? And he uses touch with both. Spittles, saliva. A fifth similarity is that Jesus tells him not to tell others. And this is where the similarities end, though. A lot of similarities there, is it not? In giving sight to the blind man of Bethsaida, Jesus, though, and you will find it nowhere else in any other Gospels. Only Mark records this. But this is also the only instance that Jesus healed in two steps, in two stages. This blind man. So let us look at this healing directly, shall we? Again, we need to ask ourselves questions. That's how we learn about the Word. That's how we learn from it, by asking ourselves questions. I believe the Lord wants us to ask questions in understanding His Word and applying it, His Word, to our lives in that. Remember that the Jews believed that saliva, that spittle, had healing properties in itself. That's why Jesus used it. He knew what they believed. Did he have to? I don't believe so. But he did, because that's what they believed. And he used that. Now notice what Jesus says to the man and how he responds. For you're going to see that this becomes another teaching moment for the 12, but it also becomes a teaching moment for us as well. Notice what Jesus says to the man and how he responds. After spitting on his eyes and laying his hands on him, touching him, He asked this blind man, do you see anything? Do you see anything? And it's emphatic. And he looks up, the man, and he looked up and said, I see men. But now remember that Jesus has taken him away from his friends. He had taken him out of the village by himself. Well, so who was he looking at? What men was he seeing? The 12. The apostles. The apostles were with him when he did this, when Jesus healed this one man. So he says, I see men, for I see like trees walking around. This is why this becomes another teaching moment for the 12. This goes back to what Jesus had said to them earlier. Why were the 12 with him when he healed them? When he healed this blind man? Why does Jesus say, ask yourself this, why does Jesus say to the blind man, do you see anything? It wasn't just for the purpose of the blind man that Jesus was saying that. It was also for the purpose of the 12. Why he said that. Do you see anything? And the guy looks up and he's looking around him. He sees the 12 and he says, I see men like trees walking. Go back to what Jesus had said to them earlier in his rebuke of their thinking. Go back to that earlier, what he said, when I was bringing out, what I brought out last week. Remember what Jesus said to them? They began to discuss one another. They had no bread. Jesus, aware of this, said to them, why do you discuss that you have no bread? Do you not yet see or understand? You see, with knowledge comes understanding, as I said last week. Jesus says then, do you not yet see or understand? Do you have a hardened heart? Having eyes, and he quotes Isaiah, having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? And do you not remember? Remembrance has to do with knowledge, but again, it has to do with understanding and putting that into action. That's why Jesus says what he does. And then in verse 21, and he was saying to them, do you not yet understand? Remember that Jesus goes back and he explains to them, of course, about the 5,000, about the 4,000 he fed, that he had just fed, but the emphasis is on hearing and seeing. They were with him when he healed that deaf mute man. When he heard for the first time. When he was able to speak clearly. They witnessed that. And now here's this blind man. And Jesus says to the blind man, "Do you see anything?" It was for the benefit of the 12 that he did that. Because again, it goes back to what he had told them earlier. Having eyes, do you not see? Having ears, do you not hear? Do you not yet understand? Now, this man that he had just healed was blind. He was not born blind. How do we know that? Because he knew what trees were. He knew what trees looked like. If he had been born blind, he wouldn't know what a tree looked like. He might be able to touch it, yes. But he wouldn't know what one looked like. But here he knows. So he wasn't born blind. He knows what trees were. But the man's not completely healed yet. He sees men, the 12, the apostle, like trees walking. Now we know trees don't walk, right? But trees are also not living as humans do. They're alive, yes, they're living. But they can't see as humans do. They can't perceive as humans do. They can't think like humans do. I just see men like trees. So he's not seeing clearly. He's still nearsighted. He's seeing things, but without clear form or figure. That's what he means. And so when he says that, Jesus knows the 12 hear that as well. So Jesus touches the man again. And then his sight is completely restored. Mark uses an interesting, and this is a rare word in the Greek, telogos. Telogos, it means, it indicates clear sight at a distance, meaning the one who was blind can see well. It's like now he has 20/20 vision, perfect and complete vision. So, what we learn here is, Jesus does it in the second stage. Again, he lays his hands on his eyes, and he looked intently, and was restored. And began to see everything clearly. That's that word that Mark uses there. And Jesus sends him to his home, saying, "Do not even enter the village." In other words, he doesn't want him to go back to his friends. He doesn't want him to go back and tell that he now has his sight. He just says, "Go home." Again, this is fulfillment of prophecy. It's fulfillment of what we read in Isaiah, as I've quoted before, Isaiah chapter 35, verse 2 and verses 5 through 6. Which says, "It will blossom profusely and rejoice with rejoicing and shout of joy. The glory of Lebanon will be given to it, the majesty of Carmel and Sharon. They will see the glory of the Lord. This is what he's referencing. Why this fulfillment of this? They will see the glory of the Lord, the majesty of our God. In verses 5 through 6, then the eyes of the blind will be opened, and the ears of the deaf will be unstopped. Then the lame will leap like a deer, and the tongue of the mute will shout for joy, for waters will break forth in the wilderness and streams in the Arabah. So this is a fulfillment of that. And Jesus' disciples see that, but here comes something for us to think about. For this was a teaching moment for the 12, but it's also a teaching moment for us. What Jesus was doing here, he was giving them the reason why he did what he did. He was giving the apostles a lesson in insight. Notice that? A blind man could not see at all. Now his sight is restored. But it's not only about physical sight. It's also about insight. Again, it goes back to what Jesus had told them before in his rebuke. So let us think about this, shall we? That's what Jesus was striving to teach the 12 here as well. I believe Brother Mark Seitz is correct when he says, Jesus healed the blind man in two stages. He healed the blind man in two stages as a living metaphor of the two stages through which the disciples opened their eyes to his identity and his mission. We're coming to the turning point now in the Gospel of Mark. We're coming to a turning point and a watershed in the Gospel of Mark. It's in the summer of 29 AD, his third year of ministry. And he has cemented to the 12 who he is, his identity and his mission, that he is the Son of the living God. And the reason why, as Brother Mark Seitz said, Jesus healed this blind man in two stages as a living metaphor, because there are two stages through which the disciples, the 12, the apostle, had their eyes opened to his identity and mission. And that's what he is doing here. They are beginning to see, the 12, the apostles, they are beginning to see who Jesus is. Notice, it's in his third and last year. They've been with him 3 years now. But they are just now beginning to see, and yet not clearly. They're beginning to see who Jesus is. Again, not clearly. And we're going to see this next week as we continue in Mark. Even more so, before we turn the corner, and before Jesus turns the corner. What about us today? I think Grant Osborne puts it well. What we believe dictates the decisions we make in our lives. If our perspective and beliefs are faulty, then our choices will be faulty as well. What Jesus is telling them, And that's when why he mentioned what he does about the beware the leaven of the Pharisees and Herod. He was saying, and he's trying to teach them, beware of spiritual blindness. See, it wasn't just about physical sight and healing this blind man. I mean, Jesus could have done that instantly. But he chose not to. He chose to do it in two stages. And he did that, again, for a reason. And it all has to do with him and who he is. I want to conclude with this from Brother Nofel Staten, who wrote this many years ago, and I think this is so apropos. Because there's a sense, you see, in which we see nothing clearly until we see and we hear how the Lord does, and that spiritually. He says this, and I think this is so good. Let us be open to be so filled by the Spirit of Christ that we will be willing instruments of uniting people to God with the love of God that flows through us. Let us be a love to others that does not erase the differences that exist because of culture, group affiliation, race, or whatever, but will handle those differences because we are Christians. That all, just Christians, saying to the world of broken, alienated, estranged, and polarized people, our world in our time, this was witnessed just this past week. What we saw happen in Texas and elsewhere. But that just Texas just magnifies it. What we need to bring to a broken world, to broken people that are outside of Christ. Because brothers and sisters, outside of them, where are they going? They're not going the right way. They're not going to end up in the right place. He said, can you begin to imagine what it would do for the church and to any community when God's people begin to see people correctly? As people created by God who have sinned, who have feelings, who have hopes, and who deserve to be touched by God's people correctly. To see clearly will change our conduct. To see clearly will provide us with the kind of power to live abundantly the will of God. And brothers and sisters, that's what Jesus wants. That's what he was teaching the disciples here. That's what he's teaching the 12. It's all about insight. It's all about perspective is what Jesus was doing. Yes, praise be to him that the man had his sight restored. He could see again. He was no longer blind. But Jesus wanted them and the 12 and people around him, just as he does today, to not be spiritually blind. to have spiritual insight. That's what it's about, you see. Good lesson in that. Let's stand, we're going to sing. Trust and obey. That's the beginning part of it. But it has to continue on. I want to mention that, and I think this is so important. When someone is immersed into Christ, when we become a Christian, like young Eric did Friday, that doesn't mean that you're a grown Christian just like that. Doesn't mean you got it all together. Doesn't mean you're going to. That's why we need to continue to encourage one another, to lift one another up, why we need to study together in that, because that's just the beginning point. When we become one in Christ, when we become one in Him, that's just the starting point. And as soon as that starts, guess who's there? Not physically. Not literally. But guess who's there who wants to wreck that thing? Satan. He'll be coming. Does come. Not physically, not literally. But does. Because he doesn't want us to continue on. And that's what's important. See? So we must never forget that, is that when we become a Christian, it is all our problems aren't over with. We still have problems, don't we? We still get sick and so forth. We have all kinds of other problems. It's because we're not there yet. We're still going to run. We're still running the race. And we'll be running the race until our race is done. And that's what we have to. That's what we have to do. That's why it's important that we do this. Continue to walk with Him. And trust Him and obedience.